Famously, Robin Hood steals from the rich to give to the poor, which is not that much different to this podcast, where we steal time from you, the audience, to give to us, the greedy overlords, that song from that movie. But will you do it for your king?
No. I don't know what the line is.
Line.
Who will you do it for?
Line.
Who will you do it for?
Robin Hood.
What's the name of the song?
Do it for you.
Summer of 69.
Thank you. Thank you for joining the 96th episode of that song from that movie. Wow. The journey through the very best and worst of movie songs. I am your Stinks of Garlic host, Dietrich. And as always, joining me is a once arrogant nobleman, Alex.
Once. Or still.
It's definitely still. Still.
Yeah, still once.
Still once. Like
you picked that lane and you stuck with it.
Yeah, once and for always.
And completing the lineup is the man who now has a crossbow. Ho, ho, ho. Ben.
Very true, John McClane.
Oh, Clemency.
You can see the accent definitely stays strong, doesn't it?
Definitely.
Yep.
Obviously.
It appears fame isn't everything. Potter.
Love. Actually,
I don't know any of the films he's in.
The air was full of spices.
I didn't realize you were still going to quotes.
I was, sorry. That was a quote from Sense and Sensibility for you.
Oh, yeah.
Sorry.
I would like to know in the past fortnight, what have you been watching?
Robin Hood.
Very good work.
Is that a thing now? If the name of the film can be fit into three syllables,
just, well, we can just squeeze it. Yeah, we'll absolutely try and squeeze it in. Go on, Al, you go first if you've seen anything.
I have. I watched the film Tar.
Oh yeah,
which
you think?
I really, really, really enjoyed. Well worth the BAFTA.
Because you resonated with the character?
Yes, exactly. Yeah, very much resonated with the character of Tar. I just thought, what a performance, first of all. But the film itself, because I think often, the kind of performances that get best actor, best actress noms and awards, are usually the films don't always match them. But I think in this, it definitely did. Like, the full film was just great. I mean, it was mainly her performance, but that made the film great rather than it just being a film with an amazing performance in it.
But Ali, all it is really is her.
Yeah, and she was great.
Yeah. Toxic masculinity without a male.
There's just the ending of it is amazing. Yep. It's not really a twist, but it's got a really cool like ending scene. But yeah, would highly recommend it. It's on Sky Cinema Now TV.
Big sponsors of us, yeah. Sky Cinema.
I hope they don't listen to the previous episode where we spent most of the time slagging off Sky Cinema.
Yeah, probably. Stupid Sky. Sponsor is Netflix.
Yeah, we want that Netflix money.
That sweet, sweet Netflix money.
We'll get cancelled after one season.
Yep, that is how it works.
Yeah, but we'll be rich. And isn't that why we're doing this?
Yeah, all for the money.
It's why I'm here. What about you, Ben?
I can't remember if I spoke about this on the podcast already, but I watched All of Us Strangers, which is, I think one of the best films I've seen in a long time. Blubbering like an infant I was in that cinema, to the point where I knew the film was coming to an end soon, and I was like, get a hold of yourself, Ben, you're about to go back into the real world. Because there's where my local cinema, I don't know if this is typical, but when you leave, there's always two stewards holding the doors open. And I usually sit quite close to the screen, so I'm often the first out, especially if it's just me on me Todd. And so I'm always the first person to greet them, and I didn't want to be like, thank you, as they hold the doors open for me as I go back into like the 1 p.m. daylight. As loads of children are walking out of Hollywood Bowl, and I'm just there, like, blubbering away.
Sobbing.
Yeah, but that's definitely a film to look out for. And we will have to cover it at some point on the podcast, because it's got some great use of Frankie Goes to Hollywood.
Oh, wow. Okay. Hi,
yeah. Is it that? Yeah, no, it's not. Dee, have you watched anything at the movies or movie-related?
Not at the movies, but movie-related, yes. And it's not a movie.
Movie adjacent.
I've watched the Ted prequel series.
The Ted prequel. I didn't even know this was a thing.
Yeah.
Ted prequel.
So it's like him and a young Johnny going to school where hijinks ensue.
Right, okay. Get you. I wondered how they were going to do it without Marky Mark.
I think this is part of the problem. I'm finding it very hard to believe that the kid that they've picked to play a young Marky Mark, given that Marky Mark and the Funky Bunch exist.
Yeah.
It looks nothing like him, and it just feels like a completely different character. I'm generally enjoying the show, but there's a real disconnect in my brain as to this is nothing to do with the films.
Like, yeah.
Not that there's a huge Ted Law, of course, or a Ted CU.
Feared Law.
Yeah, Theod Law. It would have to be Theod Law, wouldn't it?
Theod Law's good. Yeah. We need to contact Seth MacFarlane and be like, we've got an idea.
Patent pending. Theod Law. Yeah, absolutely. Is the guy a big of a prick as Marky Mark?
Not in the show. Maybe in real life. I don't know.
God, that guy's Instagram is obnoxious. Just him walking around his house with huge pecs saying, like, you know, some sort of quick prayer to Jesus, and that's what seems to have done it.
Oh, I thought we were going to get the accent.
I cannot do a Marky Mark.
Co-op.
Are you a co-op?
Are you a co-op?
George on a hat.
Optimus Prime.
Optimus Prime.
Right, let's move on.
Yep.
So if you found our previous jokes about respecting the brackets in song titles played out, then get ready for a whole new world of hell, as we're talking Bryan Adams' mega hit, open brackets, Everything I Do, close brackets, I Do It For You from Robin Hood, Prince of Thieves, respect the brackets.
Always respect the brackets.
I mean, opening with brackets. Jeez. Gee, that's a new level of brackets.
Yeah. Any bracket has to be respected, I think, is the mantra. Yeah.
Especially if you put it at the beginning of the sentence.
Yeah. So to find out what was happening in the world when the movie came out.
Time for some history.
Lovely stuff. Yep, it's me this week. We are going back to July 1991. Huge summer blockbusters of this year. I'm going to have a quick run through.
Go on.
Super quick 10 out of 10s, guys, for these ones. Terminator 2, Judgment Day.
Wait, hang on. We have to say 10 out of 10.
Oh, out of 10. No. Quick. Sorry. Quick out of 10s. Quick 10 out of 10s on all these films.
Okay, go. Quick
out of 10s. Terminator 2, Judgment Day.
10.
At least a 9.
Point Break.
Less.
At least an 11.
At least an 11. Shoot into the air. Hot Shots.
Oh, my God. 9.5.
1 or 2.
One.
Oh, one. Okay, less.
Not
eight.
Not part dirt, not part six.
No, if it's part dirt, it's definitely more.
Boys in the Hood?
Oh, I don't think I've seen Boys in the Hood.
You've not seen Boys in the Hood? It. Terrible. Now, what about Project Colon? Respect the colon, Eliminator.
Definitely don't know that.
Well, guys.
Based on the name alone, 10.
This entire film is available on YouTube.
Okay.
So, everyone listening, turn off now. There's something more important you can do with your life. Go on YouTube, type Project Colon Eliminator, starring David Carradine and someone called Hillary English, which sounds like a snooker move.
We've Hillary'd her English.
Oh, you got to put some of that Hillary English on the shot. You ready for the synopsis? I mean, I think this is what we're talking. This is July 1991. I think this film is slightly late for where it should be.
Okay, so before you go into it, is it or is it not a prequel to Project Runway?
Yeah, unfortunately, could be. It could be. So we have a scientist working in a top secret government weapons technology research place.
Yeah, of course.
That's right, research place.
That's a lot of words.
As every 90s film begins, yeah.
He becomes so disillusioned that he destroys his latest creation, an ultra-sophisticated flying attack laser.
What?
Soon, understandably, terrorists want him to recreate the invention, and so they kidnap him. Now, a shady government contact recruits two veteran special forces operatives, Ron Morell and John Slade, who soon find themselves in a frantic race against the clock to rescue the scientist to keep his deadly knowledge a secret. I watched 25 minutes of this film, and I'm incredibly disappointed that this podcast has interrupted me from watching the final hour.
It's only an hour and 25.
Interestingly, there is a YouTube video that did a kill count for John Slade, and I was like, oh, this is going to be interesting. I wonder how high it goes. The kill count was 3.
Hardly a count.
It's a very unusual video to make for someone with a kill count of 3. But yeah, guys, Project Eliminator 1 for the DVD shelf.
Well, no, it's on YouTube. It's one for the e-library.
True, yeah. only the true connoisseurs of Project Eliminator would buy something that's free on YouTube.
Yeah, and they'd go for the I'm assuming there is a 4K version.
My 4K shelf is ready for it. It's got that nice little place made in between Lords of Frogtown and Frankenhooker. Anyway, another film apparently came out in July 1991 here in the UK, which is Robin Hood, colon, Prince of Thieves. This is an American, yes, an American action-adventure.
No.
I know. Directed by Kevin Reynolds, starring the likes of Kevin Costner, Morgan Freeman, Alan Rickman, and Mary Elizabeth Mastrantonio. This is a pretty well-known film. It's a classic Channel 5, for our UK listeners, Channel 5 Sunday lunchtime film. What do you think of this one?
Okay, let's do this. For my money, this could potentially be the most 6 out of 10 movie we'll ever cover on this podcast.
It's a good 6 out of 10, yep.
I mean, it might even be the most 6 out of 10 movie ever made. Every aspect of it seems to somehow equal out at a 6 out of 10 somehow. So I can definitely see why this movie is so often the butt of the joke. Because if it was any better, the jokes would probably elicit a sort of, okay, reaction. Whilst if it was aggressively worse than 6 out of 10, I guess akin to what we're seeing with Madam Web at the time of recording, the jokes would feel a bit lame and hacky. So this Robin Hood movie is this perfect middle ground target for easy jokes. And if you've listened to this podcast before, you'll know that that's where I thrive.
Dee's got a lined up list.
But digging deeper though, when Prince of Thieves takes itself seriously, I found it to be a bit of a drag, yep. Like a bit tedious.
Yep.
But equally, when it's more lighthearted, whilst I certainly did prefer those sections, it would then get too zany and it'd take me out of it.
Yep.
When I think what the film really needed was someone to take the lead, grab it by the scruff of its neck, pick a single tone, stick with it, and actually develop it according to that chosen style.
Yeah, okay.
Whichever one it may be. Because clearly somebody wanted a straight drama. Somebody wanted swashbuckling fun times. I guess sort of like akin to a Pirates of the Caribbean.
Yeah, like a family adventure film.
Like the Errol Flynn Robin Hood films.
Yeah, and we ended up with neither winning out.
Yeah.
And it's a shame because I feel like both of them would have been sensible options for this. And both probably could have resulted in a very good movie. But not whilst within the same movie.
Yeah.
When you mix these two tones together, you end up with this middling movie, which pulls you from one scene to a next scene without much cohesion.
Mm-hmm.
It's as though multiple people are pulling in different directions, and the end product loses out for it.
Yep.
So I guess where I am with this movie is, when a scene lands for me, like the training montage, it's enjoyable, and it goes on too long, and it isn't befitting of sort of a gritty imagining of Robin Hood. And when a scene's supposed to be hard-hitting, I know there's a quote, fun scene around the corner, so it feels pointless and it loses its weight.
Yeah.
And I guess also, when there's something where they think it's going to be, going back to the fact that this is an American film, sort of like a hell yeah moment, like that bit by the Sycamore Gap Tree at the beginning where he's like, I'm Robin Hood, bitches.
R.I.P.
R.I.P.
I think that's probably the best thing about this film, seeing the Sycamore Gap Tree.
But this is a really good jumping in point for me, because this was the part that really, really, I couldn't get past it.
What, as in when he arrives?
Yeah. So,
yeah, go on.
This is going right off what you said, Ed. There is an the first scene is this dark, dingy. He almost gets his hand chopped off. People do get their hand chopped off. It's very, gritty, creepy drama kind of thing going on. Then all of a sudden, he pulls a guy's head under the blade, his head gets chopped off, and it's swashbuckling escape type thing. Then, the next bit, Brian Blessed is in it, doing what Brian Blessed does. But then, Alan Rickman, the Sheriff of Nottingham, shows up in, a white cape that I don't remember him wearing again. And in this kind of, they're all in, robes. There's a cackling witch. There's, dice being thrown. The juxtaposition just in the opening, 5 minutes is too much to cope with.
Yep.
But the scene, we're assuming, I don't know if it, I think it says we're in Jerusalem, actually, at the very beginning.
Yeah, for some reason, yeah, we're in Jerusalem. Yeah.
For some reason, this film opens in Jerusalem. I don't know if this is the first time ever that they actually put Robin within the crusade, but there you go, he's there. So he makes it back to England quite easily by the seeming of it.
He just appears on the shores of England.
But this is it. He appears on the shores at Dover. Clear white cliffs of Dover.
Cliffs of Dover.
Kisses the sand. Yeah. He says, we will be celebrating with my dad by nightfall, right? The next scene we see of him is at Hadrian's Wall at top of England. But also more north than Nottingham. So what? but what's so annoying about it? It's fine, they could have shot it anywhere. But it's so clearly Hadrian's Wall, because it's such an iconic... It's not even just Hadrian's Wall, it's the shot of the sycamore tree from Hadrian's Wall. They couldn't have made it more obviously Hadrian's Wall. It's why do that? It's just the logic of it is just... It's just, look, just yep. encapsulates the nonsensical nature of this entire film.
American action adventure.
But it's just they such don't a have silly a clue. Film.
It's like 200 miles traveled in about an hour.
And like, yep. I know, sometimes, you know, it's a bit silly to like go into the detail, but it just really perfectly encapsulates how stupid this film is. But it's still kind of watchable, and that, which is why it is the 6 out of 10 that you say it is, D, because it's like it goes to extremes. And you know, the performance of Alan Rickman in itself goes to extremes.
Oh, yes.
It's just ludicrously mad and camp and over the top. Then you have, like, Kevin Costner, like, doing whatever he's trying to do, which, like you say, is a different film at points to himself. So sometimes he's doing it very seriously. Sometimes he's doing, yeah, this kind of swinging from the candelabras and stuff like that. It's just, like, it's... Yeah, it's just... It's kind of a roller coaster, but more like a you know, a go-getter. You are on a ride, and it's kind of, there are some thrills, but they're not consistent, and they're not always enjoyable. I mean, I think the less said about the Morgan Freeman character, the better. And what is this film? And it's been a long time since I've seen it, and I didn't watch it to the end, which is a shame because I missed the Sean Connery bit, which was again one of the highlights.
Yeah, the Sean Connery uncredited cameo.
I mean, why is it uncredited?
Apparently, it's because of the
he
cost.
Didn't want to be associated.
It was the amount of money he was asking for. He was asking for $1 million
for his name.
Well, just to be in it for a bit longer.
Oh,
so they agreed to pay him $250,000 to do his little bit, and I think he donated it to like to some sort of charity.
After watching the movie.
Oh, you missed one of the most hilarious scenes, the fight at the end. Some of the camera work in that is hilarious. It never looks like either of them are in any threat. There is no danger. Yeah. Those sword strikes are going nowhere near anyone.
Well, it's weird because like there's parts of this movie that look incredibly cheap.
Oh, yeah. It
looks like a bit of classic British Doctor Who magic. Yeah. Where okay, they're on an alien planet, but they're on basically an overground woodland next to a pallet factory or something like that.
Yeah.
But then there's other bits of this film that look, obviously, I know the Hadrian Wall bit is weird because it's just been at the White Cliffs of Dover, but that's like an incredible shot.
It does look cool.
It's just such a muddled movie.
It's a lazy movie.
Lazy is another word for it, I suppose.
I think the most frustrating thing about this film is that it achieved $390 million at the box office on a $50 million budget. So this film is considered a success. And even more frustrating, because of that success, Kevin Reynolds and Kevin Costner went and made Waterworld on this, which is very well known as being one of the biggest box office bombs of all time.
So over the two films, they're balanced out, so that's fine.
Yeah, I think Kevin Reynolds was like an uncredited assistant director on Dances with Wolves as well before this, which is actually a pretty good film.
Which is the best picture winner.
I think my belief in Kevin Costner as a lead is not that strong, especially when we get to like The Postman. Anyway, critically, this film was panned, quite widely panned. The only thing that received widespread love was Alan Rickman's performance, which actually won him a BAFTA.
Really?
Yeah, for Best Supporting Actor. In his acceptance speech, because he was very critical of this film, even when filming it. I think he only agreed to it with the pretense that he could make the script his own. And I think he and a few friends basically wrote his lines, or he improvised them on the spot. In his acceptance speech, which is quite funny, he says that this film had taught him that subtlety is not everything. And it's like this sort of in-joke, you know, everyone's laughing like, haha, you achieved something out of this tosh. Roger Ebert, our great love of Roger Ebert, said that the most depressing thing about this movie is that children will attend it expecting to have a good time, which is a brilliant quip.
And they will, for like a couple of 5-minute scenes.
Yeah.
Yeah, but it's almost like the most terrifying thing about it is that children are allowed to attend this film, just in general. Like, it's quite gruesome at points. I mean, the opening scene, a man gets his head chopped off.
It's nice seeing Christian Slater. He did exist at one point.
It's nice seeing
Christian Slater. He's just shot in the hand and he doesn't react at all. He just looks at his hand.
It's nice seeing Christian Slater.
He's great in Heathers. Kevin Reynolds said that what I did not want to do was Indiana Jones.
Well, you achieved that.
I love that quote. I absolutely love that. I did not want to do Indiana Jones. That had been done already, is the full quote.
Yeah.
That's true. You can say that about any film that has come before. It has been done already. So I definitely think this is fairly different. But yeah, I think you said it, D. The there was a lot of difficulties in knowing how to make this film, and there was a lot of disagreements, and I think there's a lot of fallout. Really? Yeah.
Well, it shows it comes through.
Even including whether Kevin Costner wanted to do an English accent, because he wanted to, and Kevin Reynolds says, you can't do it.
But he does at points in the film.
It results in this kind of middling accent.
Well, hang on. When he says he can't do it, does he mean he shouldn't do it, or he heard it and went,
means
you can't?
I think it's probably the latter, actually.
You can't.
He wanted to make it a bit of a riches to rag story. I think that's why he wanted to give it more substance with the Jerusalem start of, oh, he's a bit of a stuck-up prick who then grows a social conscience following the Crusades, because everyone who went to the Crusades developed a social conscience afterwards. But yes, there was a lot of difficulties, I think, in the creation with this. Not as many difficulties as there was on Waterworld. I think Kevin Reynolds, the director, left Waterworld in post-production. He was like, fuck this. And him and Kevin Costner never worked together again.
Just going back to saying about Alan Rickman ad-libbing, well, potentially ad-libbing.
Yeah, ad-libbed a lot, yeah.
So was Alan Rickman the original choice for the Sheriff of Nottingham?
I think so, yeah. The only other person that I know was touted for the cast that wasn't picked was John Cleese for the role of King Richard, and they thought that's going to be too stupid.
Right, because when I was watching it, the vibe I was getting was like a post-Labyrinth David Bowie.
I mean, that would have been amazing.
Or, to a lesser extent, a post-Goody-Two-Shoes Adamant. So I wondered if Alan Rickman was never supposed to be Sheriff of Nottingham, but if he had the most of the lines, I guess he just thought, fuck it, and just did whatever he wanted to do.
Yep, I definitely think he was definitely more on the, fuck it, I'll do whatever I want to do.
It's a shame, because he would have been a good Sheriff of Nottingham in like a quite straightforward drama version of this film.
Yeah, absolutely. I guess he rides a line from like thespian to pantomime, doesn't he? And I think he does it very well. Sometimes I just think that's just Alan Rickman.
Yeah, it might be. The case to an extent.
Okay, so the song we are discussing today, and boy is it a big one, is the open brackets, Everything I Do, close brackets, I Do It For You, by Canadian royalty Bryan Adams. This is a huge song alert. This is one of the great big movie songs. And I've got a lot of different sort of factoids around this one, and some of them go into some very weird areas. But let's get your thoughts first on this power ballad of many power ballads.
I mean, it's a Magic FM fave. I'll say that's right.
It's a Magic FM fave.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, it is the Magic FM song.
If they want to go make a cup of tea, they put this song on.
Yeah. I mean, the first thing I will say is this song has no right being 6 minutes plus. That's what I will say first off.
So we'll come on to this, Alex. We'll come on to this.
Yeah, because the song finishes at about 3 minutes, and then it just keeps going on, which is like endless like plagues of the same line, just like or slightly varied lines, just like in the background. So yeah, no right being that long. The video for this is iconic, but it was not on YouTube.
Yeah, why?
And I've got some facts about this as well.
Yeah, okay, good. That really disappointed me because I was really looking forward to seeing it again.
And if you want it, Alex, I found it.
Oh, okay, it's on Vimeo or something.
Well, no, do you want a little tidbit of where this is? Now, people posted this on Reddit. I'm going to have to give this fact now because I can't hold it back anymore.
Go on.
Various, many, many posts on Reddit. Where is the video for Everything I Do? I Do It For You.
Yep.
It's gone from the internet. Nobody could find it. It's been deleted from every corner. Do you know the only place, well, the main place you can find this from? People have uploaded it to pornography sites because that was the only place it wasn't being taken down. So there's a lot of preface between, if you really want to watch this video, careful, some of these adverts aren't very age appropriate. So you may have to put up with some adverts before it that are not suitable for work. It depends how dedicated you are to watching the video of Bryan Adams in a wood around a silk mill.
And it's fitting because I would say that this song is a popular song for lonely women over 40.
Who are often the ones flooding pornography sites.
Well, the one in the adverts.
Okay. So, I mean, before we go into the actual song itself, do you know why it's been removed from everywhere?
So the main information from it is that the production company that created that video were bought out in 2015, and the video was taken down everywhere in 2015. Now, there's some connections to that being a company that has affiliations with Bryan Adams. So it's whether, some people potentially wonder, if he's taken it down.
Right.
But he has uploaded a version that's like a tour.
It's the album version from his album. So the song was released for the film, and for his album, and which has had a big sort of push. And I just wonder, I guess he wants to push his album version. Maybe that's where he got more money or rights associated with, and less so for the movie version, which is the version we're more familiar with. It has a bit of a different guitar solo. It has a bit more, there's actually a difference in the middle, and it's only 4 minutes long. Yeah. The 6.5 one is the Bryan Adams album version from his own album.
That makes sense, because that end bit, that end couple of minutes, I don't really have much of a recollection of. I was like, God, has it always been
this
long?
There's a better guitar solo in the woodland version.
There is, yeah. The guitar solo is better, yeah. Anyway, yeah. Song itself, I mean, it's great, isn't it? I mean, I don't really... it has no substance to it whatsoever lyrically, but... You know, it has no substance to it.
Some people say every line could be on a Valentine's card.
Every line is essentially the same line, or a variation on the theme. But you know, it gets you, doesn't it? I don't know if it's the throaty way in which he sings it, the sloping ballady rhythm to it. But I'm a sucker for it. I'm afraid
you're a sucker for it. Where does this fit, Alex, in your best Bryan Adams song? Where is it? Is it this one? Is it Summer of 69? Is it Heaven?
I would say that it's actually Baby When You're Gone with Mel C.
Yeah, there we go. That's the correct answer.
I realize I'm in love. So it's a bit of Mel C alongside it, a bit of the Chisholm.
A bit of the Chisholm, yeah. That's what he needed. He just needed a bit of the Chisholm. And then I would probably say Heaven, and then maybe this. I'm not a huge fan of Summer 69. It's overplayed.
Why would you pick this version of Heaven, not the DJ Sammy version of Heaven?
The DJ Sammy version. We wouldn't have the DJ Sammy version without the original.
Yeah, exactly. And like, you know, like when I'm thinking of the Bryan Adams version, I'm thinking of the DJ Sammy version, but it reminds me of the DJ Sammy version. Yep. So I can be happy.
Fair. D, where's it on your list?
When You're Gone's at the top, then it probably is this a second, and then Run to You.
Okay. Do you like this song, then, you could do?
Yeah, I love it.
Yeah. I mean, I mean, obviously the people who were around in 1991 probably got bored of it very quickly, because I think it was number one for about 50 years.
Well, I mean, you say that, but they loved it for a long time, especially in this country. Anyway, the song only features like as the second song in the credits, and there's reprises of it, there's sort of leitmotifs of the song throughout the film. So a little piano tributes to the song with Robin Hood and Maid Marian. But it doesn't have a huge feature, and I think a lot of that is to do with some of the disagreements about how the song was produced and how the song came about. So the song was written initially mostly by someone called Michael Carman, I think I'm saying his name right, who was the guy who did the orchestral soundtrack for the film. Now, he created this song alongside a guy called Robert John Lang, also known more in the industry as Mutt Lang. First fun fact. This is Shania Twain's ex-husband. Now, I feel like this song, it has a Shania Twain twang, or a Shania Twang. I don't know if that
Shania
works.
Twang, yes, please.
Do you want to know a more interesting fact about Mutt Lang?
Well, we know she didn't.
He wrote the FA Cup final song for Ipswich Town Football Club in 1978.
Well, it doesn't get much better than that, does it? That's the Pantheon.
And did they win?
What's greater, Everything I Do, or... I forget what this song. I'm gonna have to say this again now because I've not wrote the song down, but I'm gonna have to find it.
Is it the Portland Road Rap?
No.
Portland Road Rap.
So what is better? Is it (Everything I Do, (I Do It For You), or is it Ipswich Get That Goal from 1978?
Ipswich Get That Goal.
It's got to be Ipswich and Get That Goal.
Never heard it before, but just from the title.
It's I'll tell you what, Alex. It's not a well-known song even in the Ipswich lore.
So you come back, you know, if they get promoted this year.
Would you like to hear some lyrics from this brilliant song?
Absolutely, I would.
Ipswich, Ipswich, kick that ball. Yeah. Won't you get that goal for me? Gimme, gimme, Ipswich Town. Make some of that history, Ipswich. It just repeats often, Ipswich, 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 kick that ball.
Well, that's good advice.
Why he made this, I have no idea.
Can I change my pick to Everything I Do It For You instead?
you may well do, Dee.
Okay, cool. Thank you.
If you want, listeners, you can find it on Spotify.
You can.
Is the music video for it on YouTube? Or has it been taken down by that dastardly Bryan Adams?
He is really monopolising the Ipswich discography.
Yeah.
It looks like it's been created. If AI existed in 1978, it would have made that song. other things that they say Mutt Lang also made, he also produced Highway to Hell and Back in Black. So the second biggest selling album of all time. But I still had to bring up the Ipswich Town Football Club anthem in 1978. So yeah, Michael Kamen initially said that he came up with the melody for this song while watching scenes from the film, specifically watching scenes with Robin Hood and Maid Marian. So he had the main sort of jingle. He initially thought this song would be better for a female vocalist. In his head, he thought this should be Maid Marian singing to Robin Hood.
Okay.
Some sources vary, and the legitimacy of this is hard to know, but I've seen it a few places. The first person approached was Annie Lennox.
Okay.
Now, Annie Lennox does deserve a power ballad. I don't think it's one that's kind of in her wheelhouse as much. Others, though, now this would have hit. A lot of people have said Kate Bush was approached.
Oh, yeah.
Now that would have been an absolute banger.
It would have been a different song, though, wouldn't it?
Would have been a different song. Now, apparently, this is the thing. Lisa Stansfield actually agreed to do the song, but people other than Michael Kamen said, actually, we need to go a different direction. So they were all set on Lisa Stansfield and then said no. Michael Kamen wanted this song, the big song of the film, to have more ye old connections. So we're talking mandolins, we're talking lutes. Doesn't scream Bryan Adams to you, does it?
No. I mean, it screams Rod Stewart, mandolin wind.
I could definitely see Annie Lennox doing it. Anyway, at this point, so 1991, Bryan Adams, he'd just come off the back of his 1987 album, Into the Night. That had not done very well, especially when you compare it to his first album, Reckless, which had the likes of Heaven, which was a huge, massive hit. And he saw himself as a bit of a rocker, like a soft rock and roll Canadian star. But he wanted a hit. And he was making his album, this album, Waking Up the Neighbours, you know, which is a terrible name for an album, with Mutt Lang.
Very rock and roll.
Very rock and roll, yep. Working on his sixth album. They were then approached to do this song for the film. They got the beat from Kamen, who's also at this time reminding, just saying, but remember the mandolin, fancy a lute. Adams was like, no, how about this? So Mutt Lang put the lyrics to it, the most of the tune, and Callum was like, yeah, I guess that's fine. But he pushed it to the second song in the credits.
I'm surprised he didn't, in like post-production, just add like a mandolin in the background somewhere.
Yeah, absolutely. Anyway, they were right not to listen to Michael Callum, because this song was huge. It was number one in 19 countries. And famously has spent 16 weeks at number one in the UK singles chart, which is the longest uninterrupted run ever. I think that's a pretty well known. Yeah, I think Drake came very close recently. I think One Dance did like 14 weeks or something like that.
I don't count modern music, though, because of
you
streaming.
Don't count modern music.
No, I don't, because stuff stays in the charts for like years. It's ridiculous.
Well, they've had to change the rules, haven't they? Because, like, Ed Sheeran would release an album and every single song would just be in the top 10.
Yeah.
Now, the song went on to sell 15 million copies worldwide, the single, that is. Now, if you struggle to frame whether that's a lot or not, I'll put it into perspective. This is the 14th greatest selling single of all time. That's
the
pretty
14th
huge.
Greatest selling single of all time. Worldwide.
I say pause for dramatic effect here, so, you know, come on. Thank you.
Is this where the top five's going?
No, it's not actually. No, it's not. I've gone for something different because I lost my top five. The song was nominated for Best Original Song at the Oscars. Did not win. Do we know what won this year?
What year are we?
What
91?
Year was it?
Well, it's 91, but I don't know if this is the 92 Oscars, because I always forget when this song came out in the summer of 91. I'm assuming it was the 92 Oscars.
Was there a song in Silence of the Lambs?
There is, technically, with the song where he's like, would you fuck me, I'd fuck me song, whatever that song is.
Yeah, he does.
He lost to Beauty and the Beast.
Yeah, okay.
Oh, okay. All right. Yeah. All right. Which song?
Beauty and the Beast.
Oh, right.
No one sings like Gaston. No one drinks like Gaston.
No one makes up endless refrains like Gaston.
Hopefully.
So, yes. Now, if you were to look up this song, obviously, on YouTube, you will get the album version, this 6.5-minute one that's a bit more tempered with a bit of a live video to it. the version we all grew to love of Adams and his band performing in a forest. There's a silk mill in the background. He's on a rocky beachside at some point. Maybe he's gone from Dover to Northumberland. Intercut with scenes from the film. That's the one we all love. The bass drum stronger. There's a weeping guitar solo. It was directed by Julian Temple, who did a lot of autobiographical documentaries for the Sex Pistols. Don't feel like it has a Sex Pistols flow to the video. But that's the one we love, isn't it? What a shame, whatever this secret company is that Bryan Adams possibly owns, took it all down in 2015.
That was genuinely good.
It has absolutely mad views on YouTube, this song.
How many are we talking?
I think it's pushing. It's not far off a billion. And actually, Bryan Adams has a lot of songs pushing a billion, songs I've never even heard. He must be absolutely huge in Canada.
I think Summer of 69 on Spotify had over a billion plays.
Really?
Yeah, that was the highest played Bryan Adams song.
I mean, it is a pretty famous
song. Did it even make my top three?
Well, Heaven was the second most played.
Well, no, that is a tune.
Did it even make my top three?
No, Run to You was the fourth most, but it was a big drop off.
I will run to you. No, it's Boyz II Men, isn't it?
Yes, I'm gonna run to you. I'm gonna run to you.
Sounds quite threatening, doesn't it?
His latest release is Waking Up the Neighbours Live.
Waking Up the Neighbours Live?
Is that the Royal Albert Hall?
Oh, wow.
Can I say that key change bit where Bryan Adams starts going like, there's no love, that bit, I think it might be one of my favourite parts of any song ever. Yep. It just hits an incredible crescendo and I'm like, come on, Bryan. I'm with you. Let's do this. And like, I feel like I need to start beating my chest. Like, let's finish this song in style sort of thing. It's so good. It gets me pumped every single time.
But it drops into the solo as well, doesn't it? Just after that bit as well.
Right? Oh, yeah. His voice fades out on the Die For You with the reverb. Very good as well. I think that's one of the best sort of fades outs. You know, like a calming of sort of the big sort of third chorus into the sort of the quiet key finish, and it is a perfect sort of, like, you know, drop down. It is a very well produced song and one that should be on every sort of power ballad playlist on Spotify.
Yeah, definitely.
Top 5. I thought we'd do a little bit of a fun game. We'll do a bit of a higher or lower on some of these box office results of various fantastic actors from this film. So I want to do a little bit of competition between you guys. You up for it? Well, you've got no reason to say no.
Then I will say yes. Yes.
Good boy. You've learned well, D. You've learned well to indulge me and my antics. Alex, ready? Well, so what we're going to do is we're going to start with Robin Hood, Prince of Thieves. Robin Hood, Prince of Thieves, which, as we've just said, scored $390 million US dollars at the international box office. What I'm going to do is I'm going to suggest another film next, and I want you to decide whether you think it grossed higher or lower on the international box office. Okay.
Okay.
If you get it right, you get a point. If you get it wrong, you get nothing.
Let's go.
Okay. So
let's go.
Absolutely. So as we told, probably in my opinion, the only good Kevin Costner film, Dances with Wolves. And yes, Untouchables is terrible. Do you think Dances with Wolves grossed more than Robin Hood or less?
It's got to be lower. It's got to be lower. I know it was the best picture winner, but it's got to be lower. Surely.
Well, this is the thing. So, Alex, okay, we'll come to you first. Are you going higher or lower?
I'm going lower. I think it grossed lower than Robin Hood.
Okay. D, are you going higher or lower?
For a bit of jeopardy, I'll go higher, even though I think it's lower.
Oh, well, like I say, we've got more. You think it's lower? It grossed $425 million at the box office. So it's actually higher. So,
yeah, put one on the board for me, even if, I guess, it was like a technicality or whatever.
Well done, technically it wins. So we're on
the 400... two best words in the English language, default, default.
We're on $425 million. So obviously, another star of this, of Robin Hood, is Morgan Freeman, who played the character that Alex hates, Azeem.
I didn't say he hated the
movie
character.
Seven. Did the movie Seven gross more or less than Dances with Wolves? So $425 million, more or less.
So I have a feeling that Seven didn't do very well at the cinema, so I'm going to say it's lower.
Okay, you're going lower. Alex, what are you thinking? Higher or lower than $425 million?
I mean, I would have also guessed lower. I mean, it is a great film.
You still can.
Yeah, I mean, I'll guess...
You also can. You can't go on the other side.
I will guess lower, because I can't... I mean, I'm shocked.
You can also guess the same if you want to be absolutely ridiculous.
Well, I just cannot believe the exact pound same. No, I think I'll go lower. I mean, I cannot believe that Dances with Wolves did that well.
Okay.
Yeah, I'll go though.
So Seven grossed $327 million. So you were right, lower. D, 2 points, yes. Alex won.
Come on.
As obviously the BAFTA award-winning actor of this film, Alan Rickman, probably the only good thing in this film, as the Sheriff of Nottingham. But what grossed more? Was it Seven or was it Love Actually? Now, so Seven grossed $327 million worldwide. Did Love Actually gross higher or lower than that?
Is this worldwide box office or UK?
Worldwide box office.
I think it'll be lower. I think Love Actually will be lower than Seven.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, I'm definitely going higher.
So, Love Actually grossed $248 million.
Fuck off.
So it was lower. To all.
I genuinely was ready to celebrate then, thinking I'd pretty much won.
Now, we've gone for some classic films so far. We've got Robin Hood, we've got Dances with Wolves, we've got Seven, and we've got Love Actually. And I was looking through the cast, and we've come on to Mary Elizabeth Mastrantonio, played Maid Marian. Now, she was in the film The Perfect Storm, if you remember that terrible film from the 2000s. Now, did The Perfect Storm gross more or less than Love Actually? So $248 million Love Actually grossed. What do we think for Perfect Storm?
Oh, God.
240 million, a quarter of a billion.
So it should be less, but also it's probably going to meet a larger audience. Like, there's going to be more people going like, oh, go see that, rather than a rom-com. So I'm going to say higher.
Okay, you're going higher with The Perfect Storm. Alex.
Is this the last one?
I have another one as well.
Oh, okay, potentially. Right. It's Pierce Brosnan, this film, isn't it? Am I thinking of the
same? It's Pierce Brosnan, yeah.
Yeah, in his heyday of Bond. No, maybe he's just
thinking there's a pull. You thinking there's a pull?
Yeah, I'm thinking there's a pull. I don't actually know whether 250 is a lot or not, but I just think that Love Actually probably didn't do that amazingly. I really remember this film coming out, so I think it must be higher. Yeah, I think it must be higher.
Okay, you both going higher?
Yep.
The Perfect Storm grossed $328 million, so you're right, it was both higher.
Yeah.
So now we come to the tiebreaker. Now, what I'm going to ask you to do this time, guys,
go on.
Grab your phones, because I'm going to get you to WhatsApp me this one. WhatsApp sponsor us. Now, I want you to guess the actual sort of box office gross for the next film, and we're going to see who gets closer. So, obviously, uncredited for this film, we have Sean Connery playing King Richard. Now, there was loads of films I could have chosen, but I've gone with one of his worst. The League of Extraordinary Gentlemen.
Oh, thank God. I thought you were going to say Dragonheart for a second. I was about to leave the podcast.
So how much do you remember this film, The League of Extraordinary Gentlemen? A very unusual film.
LHG.
How much do you think The League of Extraordinary Gentlemen grossed worldwide? Ping me the message.
What was the amount for the largest one, which was this? What was it?
Well, $425 million was the highest, which was Dances with Wolves.
Yeah, so do I think it grossed more than that?
Robin Hood grossed $390, Dances with Wolves $425, Seven $327, Love Actually $248, The Perfect Storm $328.
But do you remember how cool this film looked?
Yeah.
D sent me his guess. Interesting, D. Interesting. Okay. Right, are you ready?
Go on.
D, you sent me it first. Alex D went low. He went $85 million US dollars.
Oh, God, you went really low.
Yeah, I went like it was a box office bomb.
Okay.
Yeah.
Alex went $375 million, D.
Oh, we've gone very different
ways. I just remember this film looking really good.
I thought this movie was like a box office bomb or something.
Was it? Maybe it was.
Maybe it was like a critical bad reception or something like that.
The answer is $179 million US dollars, which means D was closest.
Yeah,
boy. Neither of you were absolutely anywhere close. D still wins. It was a box office bomb, but it didn't bomb as hard as D thought. Thank you very much, Sean Connery. You've given us some entertainment. D wins.
And thank you, Sean Connery, for that box office bomb. You gave me the victory. I love this segment. This should be a segment every week. Now it's time to decide what is better, the movie or the song. So it's Prince of Thieves versus Everything I Do It For You. As always, Alex, do you want to go first?
Yeah, it's the song.
It's the song. It's definitely the song.
It's definitely the song, and which is rare on this podcast. Well, it's rare for me anyway. I think I usually go film, but 100% backing of the song in this instance. Get rid of the film. Well, not get rid of the film. It, you know, it's of some sort of cultural significance, if not just for Alan Rickman. But it's an absolutely iconic song. I mean, I guess the question would be, is this song more iconic because it was in this film? Or would it have stood up on its own without the video that has this film heavily present in it? Because it is kind of, you do associate the two together. Like, I don't think you think about the song without thinking it's the song from this film.
Not that Bryan Adams would want you to.
Yeah, right. I'm not talking myself into saying the film, but I do, you don't have the song without the film. But I think the song has surpassed the film, hands down.
Yeah, 100%.
I'd go on to say that this film is only relevant because of this song.
Yeah.
I think this is the only reason I know I would ever bring this film into conversation is because of how iconic this song is. I know sometimes we talked about it the other way around, but no, this song has made this film stay relevant.
I feel like I've only seen this film twice, one time in preparation for this, but I feel like both times it's because I want you to listen to the song.
Yeah, and that's probably the only way now.
Yes, I guess you can find it.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely the song. This is an iconic movie song, one of the most iconic. It's probably a top tenner.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely.
Top tenner. So you're saying it's better than the songs from Postman Pat? Just so I know.
Not all of them.
Okay. Yeah, that's a good point. Well done.
Okay, so that brings an end to another episode of That Song from That Movie. Let us know on one of our many, many social media platforms which one you prefer, the movie or the song. Ben, what is our social media handle?
At TSFTMpod.
Cool. So you can help the podcast by sharing this on Reddit. But Alex, what random subreddit should everyone share it on this week?
Kevin Spacey. What's in the box? What's in the box?
There's a big discussion on that one.
Do we want to be on that subreddit?
Hey, if that's where the people are.
Do we? That's where the people of Reddit are.
Where the people are, we're good for arguments.
Fucking hell. So you can also help the podcast, because we're going to need it after all the Kevin Spacey fans that listen to this, by giving us a 5-star review wherever you listen to this podcast, sharing it with your friends, buying our merch, which has been updated finally, and joining our Patreon. There's an exclusive 8 Mile episode on there that you might want to listen to. So all stuff now is to do some goodbyes. So it's goodbye from myself, goodbye, and goodbye from Alex.
At least I didn't use the spoon.
That is a good line, man.
And goodbye from Ben.
Kevin Costner once said, "I'm proud of all the movies I've made. They're not sequels, they're not franchises." Star of Man of Steel.
So goodbye, everybody. Bye.
The star of Man of Steel is a stretch.
He is the main star of Man of Steel.